Yeah, our next speaker is Amy Richards, managing Root Zone Salinity in Langhorn Creek, South Australia. So, Amy Richards.
Thanks very much, and good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to take the opportunity before I begin to thank the organisers of the conference. It's a pleasure to be here in Pittsburgh presenting some of the work I did with my PhD study, which I carried out between 2004 and 2007. The study was funded by the CRC for Irrigation Futures, and I'd also like to acknowledge my co-authors and supervisors, Drs. John Hudson and Mike McCarthy. So the study took place in Langhorn Creek in South Australia. Langhorn Creek is located in the southeast of Australia on the Fleurieu Peninsula, which you can see here in the photo. It's about 60 kilometres to the southeast of the city of Adelaide, and the region is bound to the south by Lake Alexandrina and to the north by the Mount Lofty Ranges. Lake Alexandrina is the largest freshwater lake in the Murray-Darling system. The Murray-Darling is the largest river system in Australia, so it's right at the end of that very large system. Langhorn Creek is on a broad floodplain that's heavily influenced by two rivers, the Angus and the Bremer. The Angus and the Bremer traverse from north to south of the region. They originate in the Mount Lofty Ranges, and they're ephemeral in nature, generally flooding in winter in response to rainfall. Langhorn Creek has a Mediterranean climate that Kerry described in her presentation. Rainfall is heavily winter dominant, and we have very, very dry summers, and at the moment, very dry springs as well. The rainfall ranges from 400 millimetres in the township of Langhorn Creek to 380 by the shores of Lake Alexandrina. It is a very dry region, and the disease pressure is very low. It's nice to contrast with Pennsylvania, having 15 sprays per season. We have roughly two or three. We only really apply sulphur as a protectant against powdery mildew. So it's a very dry, very arid area, very dominant in winter rainfall. The climate's really influenced by the southern oceans, so we get cooling breezes, usually in the afternoon, across Lake Alexandrina, and this helps to regulate daytime temperature and reduces diurnal fluctuation. The mean January temperature is 20 degrees Celsius, and pan evapotranspiration ranges from 1600 at Langhorn Creek in the township to 1150 at the coast, which is slightly cooler and slightly more humid. Because rainfall is very winter dominant, we need some sort of supplementary irrigation during the growing season to help reduce economical yields and make sure that we maintain good fruit quality. Langhorn Creek, although it's probably not as well known as regions like the Barossa Valley, it is one of Australia's oldest and fourth largest, and it produces very high quality white and mainly red wines, and the principal variety is Cabernet Sauvignon. The first vineyards were planted in Langhorn Creek in 1958, and they were planted on those alluvial floodplains, on the alluvial soils on the floodplains of the Angus and Bremer River. Those floodplains are characterised by fine sandy and silty sediments, and those early plantings were irrigated by diverting waters from the Angus and the Bremer rivers onto vineyards through a series of levee banks. Normally, one flooding of these soils, because they are deep and silty, is enough to provide sufficient soil moisture to sustain those vines throughout the rest of the season. So that sort of irrigation method continued right up until the 1990s, when there was a big expansion in the Australian wine industry as a whole, and that certainly included Langhorn Creek. It's a broad, relatively flat area, and it really lends itself to reasonably intense viticulture that can be heavily mechanised. So during that boom of the 1990s, it expanded very rapidly, and a lot of that expansion had occurred outside of the floodplain. So vineyards were developed to the north of the region on the sandier soils, away from that floodplain. So those soils needed supplementary irrigation throughout the growing season. It wasn't just enough to put on one irrigation at the beginning of the year. They couldn't access waters from either the Angus or the Brem rivers, so they required some sort of other source for supplementary irrigation. And almost all of that water has come from Lake Alexandrina. So Lake Alexandrina in 2004 had a salinity of about 1.4 decisiemens a metre. As I said, it is a large freshwater lake. The River Murray is very heavily regulated, and so the lake at the terminus of the Murray is also very heavily regulated. Barrages are constructed at the mouth of the Murray, where it flows out into the sea. So rather than it used to be quite tidal, whereas now it's just a large freshwater lake and it just gets that inflow from Murray River. So it's moderately saline. And it's very, as I said, it's very heavily regulated and it's prescribed, which means that anybody who accesses water from Lake Alexandrina has to have both a licence and then they receive their allocation. And these allocations are very tightly controlled. Grape growers who access this water must report on their water use each year. They must monitor their groundwater. They must plant 2 hectares of deep-rooted native perennials for every 100 megalitres of water that they take from the lake. And they're also required to have an irrigation efficiency of at least 85%. And most of this was to ensure that in moving to irrigation with surface water from the lake, that growers didn't cause groundwater recessions and raise the regional water table. So in order to achieve very high irrigation efficiencies, growers in Langhorne Creek have opted for drip irrigation. Almost all growers off of that floodplain would employ some sort of drip irrigation. Many growers use soil moisture monitoring methods, and almost all growers would be using some sort of deficit management irrigation strategy to irrigate their wine grapes. Most people would use a regulated deficit irrigation, so during the period between set, when grape berries are rapidly expanding and dividing, they would be ensuring that they have a slight water deficit to control berry size, so that at the end of the season, berries have a good skin to flesh ratio and produce high, and to promote the production of good colour and good flavour. So I guess that deficit irrigation is employed not only to ensure that they're very efficient and using as little water as possible, but also to promote quality. And that's worked quite well over the past 10 years or so. So these very efficient irrigation methods have resulted in an annual application of around about 1.75 megs per hectare, can go up to as high as 2.5 megs per hectare per year of irrigation, or can be as little as less than one. So a study conducted about 4 years ago was looking at irrigation in Langhorne Creek, really from the point of view to see if surface of irrigation from the lake was contributing to rising groundwater levels, and to monitor it and keep track of that situation. And what they actually found was that growers, because they're using drip irrigation very, very efficiently, they're actually up to 100% irrigation efficiency. So all water that's applied is remaining in the root zone, and there's very, very little drainage or leaching below the root zone during the irrigation season. Fantastic from the point of view of conserving the water resource and from preventing groundwater recession. But, of course, no leaching below the root zone means that any salt that's applied through the irrigation water remains there through the season. And this significantly increases the risk of salt accumulation. And in that study, the author Richard Sturzacker concluded that salt accumulation in the vine root zone might be the most significant threat to sustainability of viticulture in Langhorne Creek. And why is that? Well, high soil salinity can affect the health and the quality of wine grapes via two main mechanisms, the osmotic effect and the toxic effect. Now, the toxic effect refers to the colligative properties of the soil solution. So just the fact that the presence of any salt in soil solution lowers the soil solution's osmotic potential and makes it a lot harder for the vines to actually suck that soil solution out of the root zone. The symptoms of the osmotic effect are very similar to those of drought. The toxic effect occurs when specific ions in salt solution become so concentrated that the vine can no longer keep them out of its system. And in the Australian context, the salt that is almost always predominant in our soils is sodium chloride. So when sodium chloride becomes so concentrated in soil solution and the vines start to take them up, we start to see symptoms of toxicity. And you can see those pretty plainly here. Chloride toxicity is usually expresses itself as marginal leaf necrosis, followed by full necrosis and defoliation, and very high concentrations of chloride in the berry itself at harvest. Sodium toxicity, you can see probably best in the bottom photo here, and that has that blackening around the leaf edges. And also we see it as very high sodium concentrations in berries at harvest. The extent that we see symptoms of toxicity and the osmotic effect depend on quite a number of factors, including vine health, the method that water is applied, the timing of that saline irrigation, the cultivar and the rootstock. And it's probably, I noted during one of the presentations, somebody said that rootstocks are used quite extensively in the United States. I presume that's because of phylloxera being present here. For those that don't know, in South Australia we don't have phylloxera. It has just been detected in the Yarra Valley and is present in some areas of New South Wales and Victoria. But to date, we have some of, in South Australia, we don't have phylloxera, and as a consequence, we have some of the oldest vines in the world. So now, rather than planting rootstocks because of phylloxera, we're starting to look at it in terms of salt-tolerant rootstocks and drought-tolerant rootstocks. The third point to make about salt, particularly in the Australian context, is the presence of sodium. So that we know that we've got these osmotic and toxic effects, but whenever we irrigate using water that's high in sodium chloride, the adsorption of sodium onto clay particles can increase the soil's exchangeable sodium percentage, increase its acidicity, and that's specifically a problem in areas like Langhorne Creek that have high winter rainfall. That fresh winter rainfall can in sodic soils can really predispose those soils to structural decline. So the aim of my trial was to determine, or to really quantify this problem. How big is the problem of salt accumulation in Langhorne Creek? And what's the role of winter rainfall in leaching that salt out? And we wanted to determine the spatial and temporal patterns of salt accumulation underneath drippers. To achieve this, we undertook quite a lot of soil sampling, including a lot of soil coring throughout one particular trial site in Langhorne Creek. The soil was sampled post-harvest after the end of the irrigation season to have a look at how and where that salt built up in the root zone, and then again at the end of winter or around the middle of spring after we had our rainfall to see determine the extent of leaching by winter rainfall. In addition, we used Transmit, which is a two-dimensional version of the model Leachem, to develop a two-dimensional model of water and solute movement in the root zone. And we did that with the five main soil types in Langhorne Creek. So back to this extensive soil sampling, which took a large number of cores in one particular trial site, which is gradational sandy clay loam, those lighter soils I was talking about in the north of the region that require supplementary drip irrigation for the whole of the season. We took samples from We took six cores, one directly beneath the dripper, which is located just here. So we have another dripper over here. This one's the midpoint between two drippers. And then we took three more going out into the mid-row and one right in the middle of the mid-row. So we got a really good three-dimensional pattern of soil salinity in that entire root zone. The soil cores were taken using a hydraulic soil corer, which was nice and quick and efficient. And there's another picture of the corer. The soil core is taken out, laid on the ground, and from there we can take roughly 100 gram samples of soil and send those off for saturation analysis of EC of a saturation extract. So looking at some results, we've got a dripper here and the second dripper over here, and this is roughly the midpoint between two drippers. Today I'm not going to show you the results from the mid-row just to save on time. I'm just going to show you results from the vine row itself, where the majority of our roots are. So we have the three cores that were taken here, and it's been plotted in sigma plot and smoothed to create this effect. We go down to 1.2 metres here. I'm sorry, I didn't convert that to inches, I should have, but for the rest of the presentation, it's all going to be in centimetres, apologies for that. And then we go out 30 centimetres here, 30 centimetres away from the dripper, that midpoint between two drippers. The legend that you can see here is in EC saturation extract, going from zero to red, being 5 decisiemens and quite salty. So what we see here is a picture of November soil salinity. This is in 2005. We did have a build-up of salt in April of 2005 after we irrigated. And what we wanted to see here is whether or not winter rain, that winter rainfall that we received, which was slightly above average that year, whether it did actually leach salts out before the following season. And you can see here that soil salinity in the root zone, which is roughly down to 60 centimetres around here, that active root zone, is reasonably fresh at around the time of bud burst and the main period of vegetative growth. So then we started irrigating in roughly December of that year and irrigated through until March. We applied only 1 megalitre per hectare of water. As I said, we're very efficient. We try not to apply too much water in Langhorne Creek. The EC of that water was 1.4 decisiemens a metre. And you can see where the salt's sitting there underneath the vine row. So roughly between 2 and 3 decisiemens a metre, you can see that we try to irrigate to the bottom of the root zone and we're quite successful at doing that. Salt tends to accumulate at the edge of the wetted area. It's a leached area underneath the drip. So we get this typical pattern of accumulation, that wetted dung in effect, and salt building up between drippers where evapotranspiration is highest. So looking at the model, we picked this model of water and solute movement at the root zone. You can see here we picked one point in the root zone to have because these pictures showed us very clearly points at one point in time and showed us a spatial distribution. Here we wanted to look over time at one point. So this was beneath the dripper and at 45 centimetres depth, so just here. And you can see how salt increases with irrigation during the season and decreases with winter rainfall. And the extent of this increase is dependent on the salt load, which is volume applied times by the concentration of the water. Because we don't leach at all during the season, it's a function of this salt load. And you can see that each year we put on roughly the same amount of water, we've got roughly the same increase, and the decrease is completely dependent on winter rainfall because growers don't apply leaching irrigation. But for the main part, you know, winter rainfall does a pretty good job at reducing soil salinity to about 1 gram per litre before bud burst and before the next season. With the exception of 2002, we had very low winter rainfall and it didn't manage to reduce salinity. So this intra-seasonal accumulation of salt is tolerable. We're achieving very good yields. Sodium is less than 60 milligrams per litre in fruit at harvest, and 60 grams is our threshold. And winter rainfall plays a really vital role in Langhorne Creek in managing that salt. But we have to bear in mind that soils in this region are quite sodic, and we are removing that salt, leaving the sodium behind and predisposing our soils to structural decline. I'm not going to go into that today, but that is certainly a long-term problem for Langhorne Creek. But what happens in a dry year? Well, unfortunately, in 2006 and still to present day, we're finding that out because Langhorne Creek is in the middle of one of the worst droughts it's ever had. 2006 was the lowest winter rainfall on record. We had absolutely very, very little flow into Lake Alexandrina. The River Murray has practically stopped flowing. And as you can see, that's caused the shoreline to recede in Lake Alexandrina. In 2004, the salinity was 1.4 decisiemens a metre. Today, it's well above 4. So we're essentially watching our lake die. Growers can no longer irrigate from the lake and they're now trying to access water from further upstream. Growers are also on quite severe restrictions too, so at the moment they have very little access to what is becoming a very saline water source. So very quickly, we had a look in 2006 at what that very low winter rainfall did. Not a lot. It moved salt around slightly, but going into bud burst in the next season, we still had quite a lot of salt sitting in the profile. and then we irrigate it again, and salt just continued to build. So winter rainfall is really, really important. Looking at that modelling output again, you can see the seasons here. We had decent winter rainfall, and we managed to reduce salt at the end of the season down to this line. But this is 2006, not a lot of reduction here at 45 centimetres depth. The lake water salinity started to rise. We had much higher salt loads. Again, not enough winter rainfall. The salinity of the lake just continued to rise, and now we're in this situation where salt is just continuing to build. Vines cannot tolerate this sort of salinity. This scenario is sustainable. This isn't. We have increasing salt load. We've seen yield reductions. We've seen increasing petiole lamina and berry chloride and sodium. We have sodium, berry sodiums in excess of 150 milligrams per litre in some blocks. Cabernet Sauvignon seems to be coping far better than Shiraz. And we have some Chardonnay blocks that just can't be picked at all. So in these years, it's just not enough to rely on winter rainfall to manage salt in Langhorne Creek. We need to be actively managing that salt through leaching. So we have been examining ways to efficiently leach that salt, remembering that growers in Langhorne Creek just can't put on more water during the season. They don't have the water and they don't want to do it. So we need to be making sure that we're completely preventing inter-seasonal salt accumulation, that any salt that builds up during the season is completely leached out before the start of the next one. We switched to less saline water source. The federal government has funded a pipeline to access water from further up the Murray. It doesn't solve the problem long term, but it means that Langhorne Creek grape growers can keep irrigating and keep managing their businesses. We're also looking at ways that we can reduce the seasonal salt load. Given that we don't want to leach during the season, how can we reduce the seasonal salt load? Well, we can either access better quality water or put less water on. Putting less water on is an option that we have to look at. So we're looking at things like partial root zone drying and mulching to reduce the salt load. And we're using modelling to predict the frequency of those dry winters. How often is this going to happen? How often do we need to actively manage salt so that growers know exactly how much water they will need in the long term for their allocation to not only irrigate their vines but manage salinity? And quickly in conclusion, in Langhorne Creek, we are seeing a building up of salt. It needs to be actively managed, and winter rainfall is really important. Defining how we manage that salinity and identifying the most efficient way of managing salt in Langhorne Creek is really important as we move into a drier climate with potentially less water. And I'm out of time, so I think I'll wrap up there.
Do we have time for one question for Amy? Yes.
There are certainly... A lot of work has been done on rootstocks that are tolerant to chloride in Australia, and that work's sort of been done in the last 10 years. And a few growers are definitely now starting to go onto those rootstocks. What we found in the last couple of years is that sodium's becoming a real problem in Langhorne Creek, and we have very little information on sodium-tolerant rootstocks. And a lot of the rootstocks that seem to have been very tolerant to chloride have completely fallen over with high sodium. So there is now some work going into that. We're almost, really outside of what we know in Langhorne Creek because we have such a problem with sodium in particular with the decline of the lake.